athletes are strongly incentivized to run at global championships, whether it be, you know, personal motivation or contractual incentives. The best way to think about the world championships in track and field is just like going through the whole Olympics and then just picking out the track and field section and having an old event based off of that.
That was Ben Flanagan, and this is episode 151 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life.
Today, we're excited to welcome professional runner Ben Flanagan back to the show. It was about this time last year that we first got to know Ben after he signed his contract with On Running. But during this conversation, he delivered an absolute masterclass on everything related to the World Championships. Not only is Ben a wealth of knowledge on all things track, he also recently qualified for his first ever World Championship team. We recorded this interview just days before he traveled to Budapest, Hungary for the 2023 World Track and Field Championships, where he represented Team Canada in the 5,000 meters. On August 24th, Ben ran a strong and gutsy race, finishing 11th in a field of exceptionally talented world-class runners. Unfortunately, only the top eight advanced to the finals, but Ben has every reason to be proud of his debut performance on the world stage, and we're pretty confident that we'll be seeing him in the Team Canada kit for many years to come. So please join us in welcoming Kitchener native Ben Flanagan back to the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, Ben, and welcome back to Inspired Souls.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, anytime. It's been just over a year since we last caught up, and I'd encourage people to go back and listen to that one if you haven't already, because we went through your whole journey from discovering running as a kid in Kitchener to becoming a professional athlete, as well as a lot of the highs and lows that you've gone through. But from what I can tell, at least from Instagram, is that this past year has been filled with mostly highs in both your running and your personal life. So I'll ask you a hugely open-ended question. What stands out to you most from the past year?
Yeah, thank you. It's crazy to think that a year's already gone by. And my parents listened to the last episode. They loved it. So they're going to be loving seeing that I'm back on here again. So the last year, oh my gosh. I mean, the biggest thing is we got a new dog. That's probably the biggest family news. We got a rescue from Turkey. Her name is Paris. Not uncoincidental, if that's even a word. But Paris was her name when we got her. But it was also the string that Hannah, my fiance, pulled on to get me to agree to the plan to get another dog. She's like, oh, her name's Paris. It's like an omen. Oh. I was like, yeah.
Because of the Olympics next year, right?
Because of the Olympics next year. Yeah, exactly. So people think we named her Paris because the Olympics coming up, but that was her name. And that was Hannah's sly way of, you know, I can't turn down a dog with a name of the fate of the Olympics, right?
Right.
But
oh my gosh, Hannah's a genius.
She's so smart. So smarter than me. So now we got two. You know, she's gonna be, you know, I'm sure we'll have another dog named Los Angeles in the near future and maybe a couple more. But yeah, she's been awesome. And then Hannah and I are also getting married in October. Mm-hmm. So a lot of a prep has been going into that. And I mean, this whole year was just focused on trying to qualify for the world championships, and yes. You know, I'll be heading to Budapest in a few days, really. So those are the biggest highlights, you know, and aside from that, it's been business as usual.
Yes. Okay. Well, today we are doing a little bit of a deep dive on world championships, because I don't think everybody, and I might just be making this up, but I personally, before I became a huge nerd and track and field and running fan, I didn't know, like, I knew about the Olympics. I didn't really know about world championships other than like very surface stuff. So one thing that we didn't get to talk with you about last time was your attempts to make the Tokyo Olympic team. So I thought it would be kind of interesting for this conversation to sort of set the stage with what you went through last time. So the Tokyo Olympics were supposed to be in 2020, of course, and then they got moved to 2021. And you thought you were on the team and then you weren't on the team, and you did kind of basically everything right to make that team. And there was a huge disappointment at the end of that. Can you kind of explain to us what happened with Tokyo, and then we'll move on to this World Championships in Budapest coming up?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Tokyo was an emotional roller coaster. That is, you know, the pursuit of Tokyo. And you nailed it. I didn't end up making the team in the end. But I would say at the beginning of the year, like, the Olympics was kind of on my radar as like, hey, maybe there's a chance that I can make that team if everything goes perfect. And then probably in about May, I had one big performance in Massachusetts where I ran a big PB of 13:20. And that was a result that I really thought solidified my position in Canada to, you know, be the third selection. I mean, we had Mohamed and Justin Knight, who kind of had those first two spots on lock. And then it was between me, Luke Brichet, and Kieran Lum kind of all fighting for that third selection. COVID made things complicated, obviously, with the quarantines, and it wasn't a requirement to run at Canadian Champs because of COVID as well. So there was a lot of just kind of added complications because of that, but it was completely understandable. So I went from a moment where I thought I was locked in on that team to basically Luke setting the bar even higher and running 13:12, probably about 2 weeks after I did that. And it was pretty late in the qualification window, right? Like maybe days before the team was selected. And I remember, like, you know, I went to take a pee in the middle of the night, and I like, cause he was on the West Coast, I was on the East Coast, and I was like, don't even look at the results, not worth it. And sure enough, I looked it up and I saw that he ran 13:12 and didn't get an ounce of sleep the rest of the night. Cause it was like, okay, what can I do to give myself, you know, at least a shot. And, I ended up deciding to fly out to Oregon to take one last chance to beat his mark, and wasn't able to do it. And that was the point I kind of just accepted the situation, sent him a message, congratulated him, and knew that I wasn't going to be on the team. And it was a huge learning experience, going through that disappointment, understanding, you know, Olympic years are crazy. You know, you just can't get too excited at any point, because what's your dream is also other people's dream, right? And there's only three spots and we're all competitive. And right when you think like you've got it done, like you've just set the bar for someone else to take a swing. So I learned a ton, and I continued to compete the rest of the season, which was also a good learning experience to kind of like learn about emotional regulation. And, you know, it's just kind of a part of my story now, and I'm hungrier than ever to make that team in Paris in a year. And a big part of that was trying to qualify for World Championships as validation that, you know, I can make that team a year from now.
Yes. Okay. So is it always like that, like very black and white? Like if someone runs faster than 13:20, you ran 13:20, right? So then Luke comes along and runs 13:12. Is that a guarantee that now he's on the team, or is it still subject to Athletics Canada choosing that third person?
Yeah. The short answer is usually no. The typical selection is usually twofold for most countries, including Canada, which is time-based, which is, you know, trying to hit some sort of standard, or at least like qualifying based off the World Athletics rankings, which usually comes with running fast. And then the second piece of the criteria is doing well at the Canadian National Championships. What made the Tokyo qualification year unique was because it wasn't, I guess, fair, for lack of a better term, to expect all athletes to be able to travel to Canada and compete at the National Championships. That piece was just pretty much, depends who you ask, but that was more or less not a huge part of it anymore. There was no automatic selections. It was just going to be discretionary. So it became to a point where, because all three spots were now discretionary, you don't have to compete at the national championship. It's really just who puts up the best mark or does the most impressive thing, you know, to basically impress the judges who end up selecting the team of three people. Whereas in a usual year, there'd be an auto selection for maybe winning Canadian championships or being top two. Sometimes it's been even top three in the past, but this was an exception just because it was too much to ask athletes to come back from wherever they were to be in Canada for that weekend, especially going through quarantine.
Okay. Yeah. So that was, it sounds like a bit of a outlier, a little bit of a complicated year, but you mentioned I learned a lot, like you had to work through the emotional regulation of kind of dealing with that disappointment. And also, it's undeniable how hungry it makes you when you have not a setback. It wasn't a setback, like you ran very, very well, but you thought you were on the team and then you weren't. So of course that's going to come with disappointment. So learning how to kind of show up to work the next day and keep doing your thing is really important information. So what do you think that taught you as far as the kind of actions that you've taken this year and what you'll take with you going into World Championships?
Yeah, there's kind of two ways to answer that question, I think. I mean, there's like the logistical piece of like trying to make teams. And what I learned from that side, a little bit more technical and boring, is that, you know, you just can't leave it too late. You know, I had one good race 2 weeks before the window ended. And I've learned that if you want to make these teams, you need to start chasing those standards or running fast times, you know, months in advance. You know, you can't leave it to the last minute. From the more emotional side of things, what was interesting is that I was teammates with Justin Knight at the time. You know, we were teammates at Reebok and he went to Olympics and came back. And there was some comforting experience that when he came back from the Olympics that it was just like, okay, it's just another race. You know, he left, he went to this massive event, you know, my dream really, and came back and we continued to train together and it was again, business as usual. But there was this feeling that it's like, okay, the Olympics is just another event, you know? And I think that kind of softened the blow, for lack of a better term, the failure of making that team, knowing that it's like, okay, this is just another event. You know, people go, they come back, another Olympics is going to come up and the opportunity is going to present itself again. And by the time that comes around, just prepping myself to be ready. So it was just kind of decreasing the magnitude of the whole situation and making it a lot less overwhelming and maybe a little bit more, just less intimidating, really. So that when I go for it again and I feel confident, and I would say the biggest piece that I took from it is, you know, I mentioned earlier that at the beginning of the year, the Olympics was this like, oh, if everything goes perfect, maybe I have a chance. And getting so close and feeling like I actually did it before, you know, finding out I didn't, it was validation that like, I can make that team, you know?
Yeah.
So going to Paris, it's a lot less about like, okay, if everything goes perfect, I sneak onto the spot. And it's like, all right, no, I belong with these people. And like, I'm going to earn that spot and I'm going to make sure, you know, I'm on that team. And that's just been a big confidence builder, feeling like actually ready and prepared to take that next step.
Okay. So 2021 was the Olympics. Now we also had a World Championships last year in 2022 in Eugene, and now we're having another one coming up. Actually, by the time that this airs, it will have already happened. So middle to end of August in Budapest, Hungary. Is that common that you see like year after year after year, or was that a COVID situation?
Totally a COVID situation. So the World Championships typically happens every 2 years. So it's fairly frequent, more frequent than the Olympics, but you don't usually have this World Championships, Olympics, World Championships back to back to back, and Olympics again. So I guess it was Olympics, Worlds, Olympics. So I guess what must have happened is that somewhere along the lines, one of those events got postponed. And it created this streak of 4 years straight where there should have been a gap in there, which is usually like the break year. It must have been the Olympics in 21, actually. So the Olympics was supposed to happen in 2020. Then there's usually a break and then World Championship. Yeah, I'm like trying to like make sense of this mathematically in my head while I'm talking. But basically, the Olympics happens every 4 years. The World Champions happens every 2 years. So it's pretty common to have like a break year where there's no international competition. And I think that's something we're starting to see. A lot of athletes have now competed, you know, 2 years straight at major global championships, and this will be their third, and then the Olympics in a year. So four
and
straight.
Then will the World Championships happen after that? Like, is the next break year 2025 or six?
They probably should. So it'll be 5 years straight. Which is crazy.
Like from an injury standpoint, like how do you think that impacts athletes? Like you kind of don't want to miss out on any of these things, right? So you keep charging forward, but I don't know, like you need a break at some point, right?
Totally. Yeah. I would say, you know, my opinion would be that you need a break at some point. And athletes are strongly incentivized to run at global championships, whether it be, you know, personal motivation or contractual incentives. So yeah, you never want to miss one. And going 4 or 5 years straight, being trying to be a peak every single summer, you miss that, you know, developmental year or an area where you can just focus on getting better without the huge peak that is a global championship. So I wouldn't be surprised that either this world championships and Olympics next year, you do see some surprising results, either just like favorites, you know, not having it another year because they've been going hard for so long, or just underdogs stepping up, who knows what it is. But, you know, with this type of chaos usually presents some level of opportunity for others.
So you spoke to making the Olympic team and the process to have that happen. I'm assuming world championships is similar. Like, do you have to qualify and there's only so many people that go for Canada? Is the process very similar, or is it somewhat different for world championships?
Yeah, it's virtually the exact same. The best way to think about the world championships in track and field is just like going through the whole Olympics and then just picking out the track and field section and having an old event based off of that. So it's really no different than the Olympics itself, except for it excludes all other sports. And that's why it's so meaningful to track and field athletes, is because it's virtually the same. It's also completely not, because it's not the Olympics. But in terms of like qualification criteria, the competition, the intensity, it's all very similar. It's just that you're not at the Olympics among athletes in swimming and archery and every other sport there. And I imagine that exists for every other sport as well, where they take it as seriously. Our version is just, you know, obviously the track and field world championships.
So, okay, this is the stupid trail runner question coming out right now. So in the Olympics, you know, obviously you talk about how special it is, right? It's not the Olympics. Olympics, you get your gold medal and you get that bragging rights of being on a podium or running or even just being at the Olympics.
And, yeah, the tattoo on your arm.
There you go. Awesome.
Yeah.
So what is the, besides maybe monetary, you know, sponsorship deals and confidence, what are some of the other benefits of going to world championships and doing well there?
I mean, mostly preparation for the Olympics themselves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's plenty of athletes that have done really successful things at world champs that have never done the same at Olympics and vice versa. And I think there's kind of an unspoken rule that, you know, if you were going to create a hierarchy, that the Olympics is the number one, obviously just the historical significance and everything like that. And being, you know, among all the best athletes in all sports, like that's where you want to get the job done. But World of Championships is just right below that, because it's the same, in theory, the exact same structure, just not the Olympics. That's the only difference mm-hmm. between the two. So from my experience, like this is my first time making a world championship team, and it does serve as like a really important dress rehearsal to mm-hmm. go through the experience of like what a global championship is like. So that right. by the time, hopefully when I'm in Paris at the Olympics, I have a lot more experience and, you know, can really calm those nerves to optimize my performance at the Olympics themselves. So, and then obviously the, you know, just the like exclusivity point of it is the Olympics comes only every 4 years, where the World mm-hmm. Championships comes every two. So there's that extra prestige of being ready on the day that only happens every 4 years, you know, obviously 3 years mm-hmm. with the COVID situation, but generally speaking, right. every 4 years.
Now, in hindsight, again, hindsight's so 2020, right? But in hindsight, maybe this could be looked at as a positive that you didn't do the Olympics first. You get this dress rehearsal at the World Championships. You learn what you need to learn as far as competing on the international stage. And then you're cool as a cucumber in Paris next year. I don't know. Like, is that just me trying to like make the glass half full? Or are you starting to see it that way as well now?
No, I think a big part of the success of my career has been learning, really. It's like anytime I encounter a situation that I think is either problematic or a failure or whatever, like it's just like I think the most important thing is to just learn from, you know, not even mistakes, but just every situation you're presented. So it's hard to, you know, ever answer the question that's like, what's better, not make the Olympics or making it? You know, the big difference, like I said before, is I'd have a tattoo that I don't have right now. That's like the main difference between the two.
World Championships tattoo.
Yeah. That's the main difference between now and then. But in general, like, I've totally come to terms with the situation. Like, it's not something that keeps me up at night. It's like, hey, I didn't make the Olympics. And yeah, I would like to think that at the end of the day, it's going to make me a better athlete going through that experience. And that by the next time I come around, I'll be more ready. Obviously, there's no way to say that for certain, but there's a ton of takeaways that I have from that year that I'm planning on applying to make this next Olympics, and qualifying for the World Championships was step one. And there's no guarantee that I'm going to even make Paris, right?
Right.
And if that doesn't happen.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Please. To interrupt you there, how predictive are the World Championships to you, who eventually makes the Olympic team? Like, I don't know if you have a sense of that historically. You know, if you do well at World Championships, do you have a good chance? Is it almost like the same group of people the next year, or how does that
more or less
work?
Yeah, it depends on the country for sure. Like, countries like for distance running specifically, like, I don't know, maybe Kenya, Ethiopia, and the US, where there's a ton of depth, every championship is very interchangeable because they have so many athletes that have hit that standard, and it comes down to like the national championship trials to basically decide that team. For most countries around the world, in Canada specifically and in Europe, usually the athletes that qualify for the World Championships are the same ones that are making Olympic teams. Now, I will say, you know, one of the things I learned from my last Olympics is that like things get crazy in Olympic years, you know, like people really step up. You just can't count anybody out. So I think it would be a huge mistake to get complacent after making a World Championships and feeling like you got the job done, but it does provide a massive advantage from like the, I don't know, mental standpoint, but also like there's an actual logistical advantage as well, because the window for qualifying for Paris started in July 1 of this year. So in theory, if I do really well at Worlds, that will increase my world ranking, or I could even hit the standard of that Worlds. That would give me a huge advantage of qualifying for Olympics a year from now. So that's one big part of it, that anyone that's not competing in the 5K doesn't get that opportunity that I now do because I'm at that event and they're not.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting about the teams. Like, yeah, they, maybe the core of them is the same from Olympics to Worlds and back to the Olympics, but not always, right? And because for the 5,000 in Tokyo, wasn't it Mo Ahmed, Justin Knight, and Luke Brochet? And then you were basically right there and left at home, right? And wasn't there someone else too?
Kieran Lum was the other
one. So five people for three spots. Yeah. And now this World Championships, it's just you and Mo Ahmed, if I'm not mistaken. So
you're totally right.
Where's Luke and where's Kieran and where's Justin? Right? So why only two?
Yeah. So why only two? Every country gets three spots per event, you know, 5K, 1500, 10K, three spots each. And the only exception is that if you had the previous world champion at the last event, so the winner of the 5K, for example, at Oregon last year at World Championships was Jakob Ingebrigtsen, Norway could in theory send four people because the winner of every event gets a bye, and it doesn't take away from the three people they can send. So a lot of times, even a world champion, it's pretty advantageous because you get basically an extra person that gets to make that team.
Right.
It's very rare, right? You know, so in our scenario, the 5K, we didn't win. So we still only have three spots in Canada. And it's twofold, right? You have to, the most important thing is you need to meet the requirements of World Athletics, which is the governing body of the actual championships themselves. That's like number one. You have to hit that in order to even qualify for the event. And then step two is every single country has their own selection policies, and you have to meet those criterias to be selected. The way Athletics Canada works is that they provide an automatic selection for the winner of the Canadian Championships in each event. So if you win the 5K, which I was fortunate to do this year, I got an automatic selection. And then the next two spots are discretionary. What happened this year is Mo and I are the only two people that met the criteria from the World Athletics standpoint. So even if Athletics Canada selects three people, if only two people qualified, only two people can go.
That, you know? Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So Luke just didn't run anything this year that met the standard.
Right. So Luke, he made an Instagram announcement, you know, months ago that he's pretty much retiring from competitive track and field. So, you know, which is, he's done an amazing job, which is, you know, Luke, I've had a tremendous amount of respect for. It also makes my life a lot easier to try to make teams and not having Luke in the picture. So, yeah. So who knows, you know, again, crazier things have happened. Who knows? He comes out of retirement for the Olympic year and tries to get another spot. But this year, it's just the way it went, you know. From Tokyo, there was five guys going for it. This year, only two have made it. So objectively, making this team was quote unquote easier from like the depth standpoint. The thing that's more challenging is every year the standards typically get a little bit harder. So I've had to just run faster than I've ever run before to make this team. But yeah, I don't expect it to be the same next year. Kieran, for example, actually made it in the 1500 and won the 1500 of the Canadian trials. So he's just in a different event that him and I haven't had to battle it out. And then Justin, I believe, is coming back from an injury. So he just wasn't in form to make the team this year. But who knows, maybe all three of those guys come back in a year and it gets really competitive again. So, yeah. Or there's another guy coming up the ranks that you're not even aware of. And that's pretty common.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that winning a Canadian championship was one of the kind of, I don't want to say surefire ways, but like that motivated you to go to,
that is
ultra term here. Yeah. So that motivated you to go to out to Langley, BC, was it last week or 2 weeks ago to run the Canadian championships there, and you won. But I noticed that after it, you weren't celebrating too early. Like you waited until it was actually announced by Athletics Canada, like you are on the team to begin celebrating. Walk us through kind of that process a little bit. And was that maybe born out of what happened in your attempt for the Olympics?
Totally. It was complete paranoia, really. Like everything I had done on paper said that I made the team. But like until I saw my name on the list, because of what I went through trying to qualify for Tokyo and feeling like I was there and almost like feeling like, you know, it wasn't taken away. Luke earned his spot. But that's from my perspective, it felt like something that was there that was just taken away. I was like, I'm not going to even get excited until I know for a fact this is a done deal. And I cannot tell
to
you
the
how
emotional
much,
regulation.
Yeah. I cannot tell you how much of like the weight coming off my shoulders when I saw that email and my name on the list. And I was like, okay, it's done. I made it. Like it made me so happy. So yeah, I feel like I've got a pretty, you know, I'm such a track nerd at this point that I have like a really good idea of what exactly I need to do to make these teams. I knew I was there. I just wanted to see it in writing before, you know, celebrated myself and also celebrated to others and like, let them know that I was there because the last thing I wanted was for, you know, to have to explain myself afterwards. But
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. You post it on Instagram and then have to come back the next day and be like, oh, whoopsie daisy. Yeah. Never mind.
Everything on the internet is true, right? So I didn't want to put anything out there. I had to retract.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, before we get to what your hopes and dreams are for the actual experience in a couple of weeks, what did you do to celebrate when you did see your name on that list?
My fiance Hannah and I, we went out for dinner. It was the biggest thing, you know, a very casual adult celebration. You know, we went out and just got a drink, had a nice meal together. The mini celebrations ahead of time is when she picked me at the airport. Our dogs had little signs on them that said like, you know, Budapest bound, which was very sweet. After I won the Canadian championships and I knew, you know, that was likely going to do it. My family, my parents came to Langley to watch. We, you know, got a drink and celebrated. So it's kind of funny. Nice. It was like kind of like 4 or 5 days of these mini celebrations until the list came out. That was like, okay, it's a real deal now. And that's when we went out for dinner. And yeah. And since then, I mean, it's a quick turnaround. I got that on Thursday, you know, 5 or 6 days ago now. And I leave on Sunday or Saturday for Budapest. So, you know, it was short celebration. It's like, all right, let's get to business. Like we're going to Europe soon.
Yeah. You can't over celebrate. You got to be in peak form in like a few days.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can't be drinking for a week straight every night.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I had to keep the celebrations a little bit toned down because we got a race to run still, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm curious, the dogs greeted you with signs. Is the family going with you to Budapest? Is Hannah going or any other family members?
Yeah, this is my public call to on. If they want to fund a private jet for my dogs to come to Budapest, that'd be greatly appreciated. That's not in the cards so far, but Hannah and her dad, my future father-in-law, they're going to come together to watch the race. Which I'm super excited about.
Oh, that is amazing. Okay. Take us to it, like how you see it in your mind. You're going to line up for the 5,000. You run heats. You run one heat, right? And you have to make it through the heats and then you do a final a few days later. So we're on August 24th.
Yep.
Men's 5,000 meter heats are coming up. What is going through Ben Flanagan's mind getting ready for that day?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, my goal, like for where I'm at right now and what I'm capable of, I want to make the final. That's like the objective number one. Mm-hmm. And I feel capable of doing it, but it's going to take like, you know, a really solid performance. My biggest challenge making these teams has been kind of the time component. Like historically running fast, quote unquote, is relatively hard for me. But what I do really well is race. So now that I actually get to be there and line up and race these people, I feel like I can compete with a lot of them. You know, I'm pretty realistic about where I'm at relative to really any group of people. So for this to be my first world championships that I can walk away having made the final and being, you know, that's 16 athletes total, I'd be really satisfied. And if I made that final, who knows what can happen? I'd obviously want to make the most of it. It's going to be a big learning experience having to run heats and finals, not something I do very often. Basically how it works is top eight in each heat, make the final straight. Like it's just, you have to be in eighth place makes the final, ninth doesn't. And two heats of eight. So I'm going in committing fully to making sure I'm within that top eight. And from there, if I make that final, then I'm playing on house money.
Can I ask another dumb question?
Please.
So who decides who's in each of those heats? Because theoretically, you could have all the fastest people in one heat mm-hmm. and the slowest people in the other. Like, that's not fair. So do they kind of look at people's times? And then also, as you're answering that, can you walk us through, like, these are tactical races. You
don't have pace setters
in the world championships or the Olympics, right? So there's must be a strategy in getting through the heats because you don't want to run your absolute fastest in the heats, but just fast enough to make it to the final. So talk us through all of that. I don't think very many people understand that.
Those are all the questions. Yeah. Totally. So the first one, yeah, there's a formula to create the heats. My understanding is usually it's based off of times. So they'll take the descending order list of all the athletes and kind of snake it where it's like, okay, fastest is in heat one, second fastest heat two, third fastest heat one, fourth fastest heat two. So that the goal is that both heats are relatively fair, right? Obviously, there's a situation maybe where one athlete didn't run their fastest time and heat two becomes a little bit more competitive. But in generally, they should be ballpark pretty close. In terms of strategy, what's really interesting is in all other years, except for this year, World Athletics used to have a qualifying system where there was placing qualification and time qualification. So what that means is there's two heats and usually it would be top five in the heat automatically makes it through. Top five in the second heat automatically makes it through. And then between the two heats, the top five fastest times make it through.
Right.
Which presented a bit of a problem because it gives heat two a massive advantage because they can see how fast heat one ran. So what usually happens is heat one goes and then heat two knows exactly how they want to, you know, how fast they need to run to get the time qualifiers.
The little cue, right? Mm-hmm. The little cue thing. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So then you can get all 10 out of heat two because they just go for it right from the gun. So they changed that this year where now it's just top eight, no little cues. Little cues are out, gone.
Bye-bye, little cue.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's just straight up racing. And what's interesting, because this is unprecedented, like nobody really knows how that influences the race dynamic.
Yeah.
There's two ways to think about it, right? I mean, maybe everyone decides to run tactical and slow because everyone's just going to kick for the top eight. But I could also see a scenario where, you know, I've run 13:13 and maybe there's someone in my race that's run 12:40. He's like, hey, I'm just going to go to the front and run 12:50 pace so that eight guys get separated and then we don't even have to worry about the rest of the field. So the way I'm preparing is to kind of address my own weaknesses. Like that's how I'm trying to go in the race, that it's like, okay, what would be worst case scenario for me? And how can I make sure that like I'm in a position to handle that so that I'm still in the mix in the top eight? And then if it, the alternative happens and we go off of my strength, which would probably be going tactical, that's an area where then I don't need to worry. Cause I actually think that I can close with almost anybody in those fields. The big disadvantage I have is a lot of them have run 20 to 25 seconds faster than me. So if we go fast from the gun, you know, I'm looking at running a time I've never run before. And that's what I'm prepping
to make it through the heats.
Just to make it through the heats, right? So, and what you added earlier, it's like that the athletes that are really looking to medal and win, the heats is a, you know, for lack of a better term, a formality for them. They're going to go in trying to exert bare minimum energy so that they're ready for the final. A guy like me, it's my first time going, like I'm going all in on the heats to make that final. Like I'm willing to risk it all because I want to make that final. And then hopefully a year from now in the Olympics, I'll have a bit more experience in being able to allocate that energy appropriately. Mm-hmm. The mistake some athletes make though, is if you're too cautious, sometimes you don't even make it out of the heats, even if you're, you know, capable of doing so.
Oh, it's so tactical. And you must have to really rely on like your intuition a little bit, like just in that moment to figure out what to do. But here's another question. If you and Mo Ahmed just happened to be put in the same heat, could you or would you, or does this ever happen with other countries where you work together somehow?
Great question. It totally happens in other countries, especially, you know, there's some videos you can look at from, you know, it might be the 2004 Olympics in Athens where Hikim Al-Gurouj was trying to win his first gold in the 1500. And one of his Moroccan teammates, like basically paced the race, was like a sacrificial lamb, which, you know, isn't maybe not the totally the way to go. Cause you get, you know, one person does well, the other person's out the back, but it's really common for athletes to work together. It's kind of depends on the situation. Like Mo and I, you know, I like to think myself as friendly with Mo, but we really don't have a lot of connections outside of that. You know, we're wearing the same uniform, but it's like he's coached by a different coach than I am. We're on different teams. Like he's gone to many, many world championships. This is my first one. It's probably not a scenario where him and I would talk strategy much beforehand. We'd probably just be rooting for each other and that's it. But there are other countries out there, especially depending on the relationship of the actual, you know, on-site dynamics. Like if there's like an Ethiopian coach, for example, that's actually calling the shots, regardless of what your independent situation is, you might see athletes, you know, clearly working together. So it's not uncommon. I think in Canada and maybe the US, it's a little bit different because you have these kind of like sub groups where it's like you have your independent training environments and your teammates for the week. Before that, you don't have much of a relationship unless you are actually on the same team, which happens occasionally. But I don't see a situation where we worked together per se, but I could be wrong. I'll find out and have to report back in a week from now.
Yeah. But it's not cheating to do that, right? Like you can kind of use that strategy
totally
if you want to.
Yeah. With anybody in the race, really, you know, even if I have a teammate that represents the US, you know, in theory, we could work together. Oh. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, this is
which
so
is not the case. I don't have an athlete in that position, but you could.
Okay, so you're the only one from your very nice track club in Ann Arbor, Michigan that's going?
Yeah. We had a couple guys that were definitely like had a shot, but unfortunately didn't quite make it. Mm-hmm. So I'll be the sole representative this year, but we're hoping for Paris, we're all going next year.
Okay. Well, one other question I had when I saw the list from Athletics Canada is that you're listed as provisional for the 10,000. So I'm curious about what that even means. Like, does that mean you might even get to compete in the 10,000? And would you even want to do that? Oh my gosh, having to run heats and hopefully finals of the 5,000, and then the 10 is a straight final, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great catch. And it was actually a surprise for me too. Like, that was not even something I factored into like my calculations or, you know, just making the team at all. So I saw that and was like, oh, wow, I didn't expect that. There are athletes that do that. Mo, for example, is running both, and he's had success at previous championships running both events. And it's a grind. It would be, I would think it'd be a lot. Usually the 10Ks first, then come back and running the 5K prelims and the finals. So something that helps with experience for sure. So what that means, so nowadays the way you qualify for Worlds in the Olympics is there's two methods. There's like this standard, which I would call like a super standard, because it's actually a lot faster than any standard that's ever existed before, but it's not mandatory. In the past, the World Championship Olympic standard you had to hit, which is non-negotiable. Now they have a really fast one that's like a bye, basically. And they're aiming for about 50% of the field to hit the standard. And then the remaining field, the quota, is filled with people based off of the world rankings. So I'll give you an example. The 5,000 has a quota of 42 people that make the event. The standard's 1307. About 30 people ran 1307. And then after that, the next best ranked athletes fill the field until you reach the number 42, and that's who qualifies for Worlds. This year, I was selected based off of ranking because my best time was 13:13. I didn't run the standard of 13:07, but I was also ranked 35th out of 42, so I get to go. So that's how it works. In the Olympic year, that standard moves up to 13:05, but the same thing applies. The goal is the standard. I know, it's so fast. The goal is the standard and the ranking quota qualification to be about 50-50, which they're not there yet, which actually implies that like that standard is only going to get faster until they reach that balance. Okay, so what that means for the 10,000. So the way it works is when I was selected, the window closes at some point, which was July 31st. No more results can influence the rankings. Well, I guess the final ranking list comes out, and then every country submits, you know, who's choosing what event, right? So let's say, for example, I don't know, Mohammed said that he wants to run the 10K, but not the 5K. World Athletics comes back and creates a new list, including the people who have dropped from other events. So there's some athletes that might be in the 10K and the 5K that only choose one, the 1500, 5K, choose another. So all of a sudden that 42 cutoff that we mentioned earlier might go down to 45, might go down to 46 because they're filling in for all the people that dropped. So when I was provisionally selected in the 10,000, that basically means that I wasn't in that original cutoff, but if enough people dropped out, that I would fill that slot. And if I did, they would select me to run the event.
That's a really good explanation.
Yeah, no kidding. I've heard it so much.
Thank you. This is not like well understood at all. Like by people who are in track and field and like know it, this is still like something everybody's getting used to. I'm literally just a huge freaking nerd when it comes to this stuff. And I knew that like I was going to have to qualify off of the ranking. So my agent and I like really tried to nail it down. The last thing I'll say is the 10K, I haven't run a lot of 10,000s. So I was ranked 150th and the cutoff's 27. So even though I was provisionally selected, like, you know, it was very unlikely that, about 100, you know, 25 people at scratch, probably not. So it's an honor to be provisionally selected. However, I knew, you know, it wasn't going to happen. However,
so there's no chance of you doubling there.
Technically, there is not no chance, but it's very, 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 very small.
So I would have to really change your strategy if, because this is starting in 10 days.
Like, yeah.
Well, and even if there was a chance, like even if you did get put in there, would you accept that? Do you have the option of declining? Like, would you sacrifice your potential 5,000 for the 10?
Yeah.
You do have the option to decline. So if you actually look back, I don't know if it's on Athletics Canada's website, but they should have like two press releases. That was like round one of selections. And at the very bottom, they have their provisional selections, which are athletes that didn't get, like mine was a bit different because I was selected in one event and then provisionally selected another. But there's some athletes that in their primary event, they would have been provisionally selected. And then in round two, they would have a second press release saying, like, these are the athletes that are now going. So you kind of have to, like, cross your fingers and wait for the scratches, which isn't fun. Because I already feel like this is tight for time, and you have to wait another 3 days. But the main takeaway from all this is that, like, every national governing body has their own prerogative in terms of how they select their team. Great Britain, for example, is under a lot of scrutiny right now because they're making things a little bit harder than they really need to be. Athletics Canada is proving that they're really trying to fill all positions possible, which I think is great because from a developmental standpoint, like if you want to have people that medal at Worlds, it really helps to go, you know, when you're young, get that experience and then come back knowing what you're getting yourself into. And that's not always the case with any country. So I'm really happy that they're like trying to, you know, really qualify as many athletes as possible because not every country does that.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier, and so we're just going to go back in time just a little bit, is you mentioned that, you know, logistically, there were just certain things you needed to do this year to, like, check all the boxes and do what you needed to do to make this team. One of the things that I noticed that you did was you went back, you said you could never break up with the track or you're having a really hard time breaking up with the track. You went back and ran indoor track this winter. And that's where you ran the 1311, wasn't it? Indoors?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You even ran a 1500, I think. I don't know if that was indoors or outdoors. That's pretty awesome that you're doing that because I think in our last conversation, we were talking about, oh, maybe I'll move to the marathon someday. But it looks like you kind of went back to the track and really took a huge swing at getting on this team. So talk to us about what value you think going to the indoor track this winter had because you had some pretty incredible results on the track this winter.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the best way to put it is it's just like, it's part of the game, right? And if I was like at this fork in the road where I had to decide between the marathon and the track, I decided on the track and I got to go all in, right? And once I made that decision that I wanted to try to qualify for Worlds on the track, I just had to be a track athlete again. And that involves, you know, running indoors among other things. So it was a little bit of like a fake it till you make it mentality, like going back to like what I did in college and what all the other track athletes are doing. And on the flip side, the bummer was I had to sacrifice a lot of road events that I really enjoyed doing because the focus was making this team on the track. So, I mean, honestly, what it came down to was last year over the summer, I ran a really good road mile. And that combined with my strength, like Ronnie, my coach, was like, hey, I really don't think we've tapped into everything on the track. Like, I think you know, if we lean into it, we can get even more out of myself than I've ever gotten before. And my mindset has always been like, I do really want to become my best athlete on the track before moving out because I don't like, once I make that transition, I don't see myself being the same athlete on the track that I am now fully committed to it. And it's a dangerous game, right? Because it's like, where do you draw the line? You know, you could go on forever doing that and miss your window for the marathon. But basically, the decision came like it came down to this World Championships. We decided that, like, okay, let's go for it. If I can make the World Champs on the track, that shows that I can, you know, I'm on track to make the Olympic team as well on the track. And we're going to go through 2024. And if I didn't make this World Championships, you know, maybe that was a sign that, like, okay, I can be great on the track, but maybe don't have what it takes to actually make national teams. And let's move up to the marathon before the Olympics. So now we're on track to go, I'm saying the word track so many times. Now we're on track to go on the track for one more year through 2024. But, you know, unless some crazy stuff happens and I find myself knocking the door of an Olympic medal, that'll be the time where I definitively will move up to the marathon and try to, you know, ideally become one of the best marathoners, you know, in Canadian history is the goal. And, you know, hopefully we'll make the team in 28. In the marathon, and I'll be full time on the roads at that point, which I'm excited about because I've dabbled with it a lot. And I personally think with my development, like the gains I've made on the track, like I think it's going to make me a better road racer than I've ever been for. So when we do move back to the roads, I'm pretty excited to see what's there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Because I think you did that road mile right after we talked last year and you cranked out a 353. yeah. and a new course record at yeah. that race, which is a very competitive, that Ryan Shea mile. It's a very competitive road mile. So yeah, I guess that gave you the confidence to think that, yeah, there's still something here. And then you went all in on the short stuff.
Yeah, basically. And I kind of just needed like the belief from Ronnie as well. And that's what convinced him. And I mean, that's really been the story for a lot of my career, is I've been kind of a token slow twitch athlete for so long that it's easy to kind of lean into that and avoid working on your weaknesses, which for a slow twitch athlete is the fast twitch stuff. And I've always kind of thought there was a little bit more there. And that mile was definitely like a TSN turning point, where it was like, okay, there's clearly something here that we haven't even like fully tapped into. Like if yeah. we dedicate time to this, like who knows how it can happen. And this year has been a lot of really great evidence for that, but I still don't think we're there yet. You know, like I'm not writing off, you know, hopefully running under 13 minutes at some point. Mm-hmm. Right. So mm-hmm. with another year of this, like really strong track focus, like I still think there's more there before we make yeah. that full transition to the roads.
Well, and at last year after the Ryan Shea mile, you of course went back to Falmouth. We talked all about this in the last episode, that holds a special place in your heart. You went back there and won it again for the third time. My question is, I'm not sure at what point in August that falls, but are you going to not be able to do it this year because of World Championships? Oh no.
I know. So sad, right?
Because your signature little like jump across the finish line. Tell us about that. Like, how did that all start? Because I wanted to see you do that for a fourth year in a row.
I wanted to do it for a fourth year in a row too. Honestly, it's not really that crazy of a story. It's just like the first year I ran it, I was just out of college. And, you know, I guess the significance is that like my trajectory of improvement at that time was pretty significant. So I kind of found myself in this form that like I've never been in before. So I was like, everything was so exciting. It was new. And Falmouth was like my first major pro win ever. So, you know, I was just going crazy coming down the final home stretch, and I jumped across the finish line, like really just out of excitement, you know, which is what I did. And people loved it. So the second year that I won, I just did the same thing. And then at that point, it became an expectation. So last year I did it, I was like pretty like borderline heat stroke. Like it was like hot there. So that jump was like pathetic, but I had to like get like off the ground to do it. So it's like, that was my worst jump by far. But yeah, I will do that every time I run Falmouth for the rest of my days. But what's cool is like, I've grown to know the Falmouth Road Race Committee, the team, like internally that puts on the event so well that they've actually all been rooting for me to not be there this year because they knew that I was trying to make the World Championships and conflicted. So there's no hard feelings. It's going to be very sad when it happens and I'm not there and I'm going to like see someone win. I'm going to be pissed because it's not me, but like it's like what I knew was coming. So I'm very excited not to be there, but it's still going to be a bummer.
They didn't offer to change the date for you. They could have.
I wish they did. September. I know. I gotta write some strongly worded emails.
Well, and you might not be there next year if you're in Paris.
I know. So this is like a conversation we had like a year ago. Like after I won the third time, we're like, oh my God, there's a chance like I'm not here until 25, you know.
But if you're saying that's a world championship year too, 25, didn't you?
Yeah, it should be. So who knows?
It could be 26 before you're back.
That would be crazy. Oh my, I can't even think about that right now.
I just have to change the date. Like,
it's got to change. Yeah. So either way, the record is 4 wins and I want to break that. So I have to run it 2 more times at like peak form. And
who won it 4 times? Bill Rogers?
Steven Sambu. And he actually won 4 years straight. Pretty nuts.
So that like, part is impossible now. Oh dear.
Yeah. Which it was already. Like I won and then I got hurt and I went and like went to the event.
3 years consecutive. Okay.
No, it's okay. Like a lot of people actually think that, but I ran, I got a femoral stress reaction the year later. Mm-hmm. So I missed it. Mm-hmm. And I was there, but Lenny Career won. And the next year was COVID. And so I actually won and then I didn't win until 3 years later. And then I won 2 straight. And now I'm going to take another 2-year gap. and then hopefully win.
Yeah.
Again.
But there's your incentive for longevity. You have to stay in peak form long enough to get 5 years straight.
It'll also be a lot, like in my opinion, training for the marathon and winning Falmouth is a lot harder than training for the track and winning Falmouth. So it's going to be a grind. Falmouth is straight up, like, honestly, the most nervous I am all year, because it's like, since I've only won it, going in, it's like win or bust, right? So it's like so nerve wracking.
So you think you're more nervous for that than you will be for world championships?
It'll be a tough call, but probably. I mean, here's the difference is like world championships, like the current state of who I am and where I'm at relative to the competition there, like I really have nothing to lose. Like it's my first time going. There's really not high expectations. Like I'm an underdog. So it's like, there's really not a whole lot on the line. I still want to do really well, of course.
Yeah.
But the difference between that and going to an event where even Canadian Champs is a great example, where there's only one auto selection and basically you have to win and you're favored to win. That is by far way more nerve-wracking than going in as an underdog. So
yeah, less pressure.
Yeah. So historically, I do pretty well as an underdog. So I'm excited about that. And it's like, if you channel that the right way, you can really bring a lot out of yourself. But, you know, the environment is so intense. I still expect there to be some nerves.
Yeah. I think you should just watch your NCAA 10K win like on repeat until you race. Because if there was ever an underdog performance, right, that was it. So, you know, you have it in you and you're capable of it. And we will be so excited to cheer for you, see what you do, and go there and have an amazing, amazing time. Soak up the whole experience. And we can't wait to hear all about it. Maybe we'll have to have you back for a three-peat.
Yeah, I hope to earn that privilege. And the exciting thing I meant to bring up is that I'm actually rooming with Rory Linkletter in Barcelona. And this is where our whole relationship began, in the elevator.
That's right, in the elevator.
Yeah, so
yeah, and Rory's running the marathon, right?
Yep.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. It comes full circle always.
Full circle. Yeah, it always does. So I would love to be back again. But thank you. It's great to be here again. And for anyone listening, hope you enjoyed.